What's up? Welcome into the Monday Mailbag. Yeah, this is Nick Patrick. I'm your co-host. Cassio, how are you doing, Mr. Nick Patrick?
Man, I'm doing great, man. I'm just so excited about everything that's been going on. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. Surviving, hanging in there. And,
all right.
And you guys got a lot going on at Deep South. We're going to get into it. But
yes, sir, we do.
Literally, you just came off a huge show at New Realm Brewing, man.
Yes, sir. It was a huge. It was our, I think we set a record for our attendance on this time. It was a new record for
really?
Us. Yeah, yeah. We had, over 750 there. So it was, I think 760 something was the count, I'm pretty sure. But we rocked them. We had a big cage match with barbed wire wrapped around the top for the Deep South title with Skrilla the Great and Jacob Johnson for the main event. And we had great matches all night long up and down the card. You know, with a crowd like that that's rocking, we started from, I mean, right out of the chute, first match, everybody was just, the kids were jacked. And we kicked it the whole night long, man. It was awesome. Every match stepped up and did what we wanted them to do. They performed. They laid it on the line, man. And when those people left and went home, they got their money's worth. It's a free show, but they all got to sit and eat and drink beer and drink, man. I tell you what, New Realm did pretty well that night because everybody was eating and drinking, man. And we had, like I said, we had 760-something people there rocking and having a good time, man.
Well, look, we've talked about it. Why don't we let everybody check it out? We got beautiful bean footage, as they say.
Yeah, let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
Of the July 27th show, Deep South Wrestling, New Realm Brewing. Here we go.
Or will Jacob Johnson finally realize his dream? Finally realize that he is the Deep South Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. We will not know, we will not find out until the conclusion of this match.
How about that, man? Brand new champion.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it, man. I put out on Facebook, I when I say this, and I'll explain myself, I said congratulations to the new champion, Jacob Johnson. He's got some huge shoes to fill because Skrilla the Great, in my opinion, I'm going to say it right now on this podcast too, is quite possibly the greatest Deep South champion of all time.
Wow.
I'm talking through generations.
And I want to
explain why I say that. I say that because there's been huge names, you know, from generations past when we first started. A lot of our champions were guys that were already established guys that had worked wrestling and been main eventers in territories before. And then when we, the phase of Deep South, when it became a training facility for WWE and WCW, all those kids were trained and paid to train. They were getting paid to live wrestling, you know, to work out every day. These kids on the independent circuit, they don't have that, man. They have to work regular jobs. They have families. They have to work jobs. They have to try and find ring time. They have to try and find gym time. They have to try and keep themselves booked, try to sell their merch, try to push themselves, pump themselves. You know, it's an incredible thing to watch for some of these kids. And that's kind of what got me into wanting to do this. And I told Skrilla the Great, I said, a title when you first get it is just, a trophy. It's just a piece. It's just leather with metal and stuff on it. It becomes a title when somebody makes it the title, with the trials and the tribulations and the storyline and the blood and the sweat and the tears that comes along. And I told him, I said, we found those new belts and we don't have, and we're going to use the tag team titles to carry on and keep continuing making history. But we're going to take the heavyweight title and we're going to showcase it and we're going to encase it in a glass case and we're going to get a plaque and we're going to name all the Deep South champions from the past up to present. And we're going to keep the Deep South belt that we have now as the Deep South belt. And I'm going to tell you why. You saw that crowd. Skrilla the Great and the kids that we've been booking have been pulling those crowds on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And that was our biggest one. And we're doing it without bringing in a bunch of outside names from guys that they say are next level, you know, and they are. Don't get me wrong, they're next level because you it's a different step. But we're doing it with our guys because of hard work and storylines. And I told Skrilla, he's not one of the guys that's being paid to live his dream. He's one of the guys that's dedicating every moment of his life to doing this. And he has taken that title and made it to where it is the showcase of our company now. And it would be ridiculous to try and change it just to try and to regain some old nostalgia from the old time. I'm going to let that old title carry on and just show the history of what we've got. But the new title, there's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears put into making it what it is already. And I'm not going to diminish that. And we're going to keep on trucking with that. And to me, for a young kid that started in backyard wrestling and has never really had an opportunity to be put through the A system, to be pulling the numbers of people that he's pulling on a regular basis on these crowds, to me, for a young man like that to be able to take your title and make it relevant enough to where you don't want to replace the old Deep South title, then that tells me that this kid knows what he's doing. And to me, that makes him, in my opinion, possibly the greatest Deep South champion of all time, just strictly from the journey that he's still on, to be able to do that without having been at the A level with all these people advising you about everything you do, how to look, how to work, how to do this, that, or that, you know, molding everything you do. He hadn't had that, you know, and he's pulling it, you know, and we've got other kids that I'm complete confidence that Jacob Johnson's going to do the same thing. And we have other kids that I know can do the same thing. That's why we're showcasing. There he is, Skrilla the Great, to me, in my opinion. Like, I'm going to repeat it one more time. In my opinion, he is quite possibly the greatest Deep South champion of all time because of where he come from and because of where he is now and because of where he's going.
How about that? That's great words, man. You got to feel good about that. You know?
Yeah, I do, man. I do. When I see their families coming, their families are all invested, and I see the emotion that's pulled from these kids. You know, I mean, there's kids that was an emotional moment, you know, the title being passed on from one to the other, because that was a storyline that had built for almost 2 years. And it was a huge moment. And for a young kid to take the title and make it as meaningful as he's made it, and to pass the torch and for us to keep rolling, you know, it was a huge thing, a huge moment for everybody, you know, and to see their families, the emotion that's pulled from their families. It's an incredible feel, man. And I'm honored to be a part of that.
That's super cool. And we'll get into it at the end of the show. You guys got a ton of dates coming up in August alone.
Yes.
That's the rest of the year. So just incredible things taking off there, and we look forward to hearing about it. We'll give y'all the rundown of where you can check out Deep South Wrestling in the state of Georgia here coming up at the end of the show. Nick,
yes,
are you
sir.
Ready?
I am ready.
A lot of questions to get to the mailbag. If you're watching along, enjoy it. Drop some comments. We'll try to get to as many questions and comments as we can from that. And in the meantime, we'll dump in to the mailbag that you hit us up on, of course, ad-free shows, Patreon. We thank y'all for being a member and interacting with this show. Wherever you see the show, wherever it may be, drop a question in the comment section, and we'll get to that on the next show here in a couple weeks. First of all, our buddy Jack Spade, who always hits us up with birthdays, You know he's coming through, Nick, and he got it in and wanted to know, as of July 27th, it was Dolph Ziggler's birthday. You have you have a history with Dolph? Talk about working.
I really don't have. I never even had a chance to meet the kid.
Really?
I was already out of there by the time he came in. But I am a big fan of his work and his reputation, his background, where he come from. And I thought that he was one of the kids that they could have possibly got a lot more out of up in WWE than they did. Now, not that he had a bad run, because he made money and he had opportunities. But I think that I don't know. I just think that they could have put a little more attention to it, and I think that he could have pulled more weight if they had given the opportunity. But when good kid. I've never heard anything. He's one of those kids I've never heard anything bad about either. So,
when did you retire from WWE?
2009 was when they released me, but I was hurt. I had back surgery in 2007. So I was out for almost 2 years, and I started back and it reoccurred and I couldn't come back. And then they ended up releasing me. So 2009 was when I got released, but from 2007 through then, I was really sketchy. I wasn't hardly there at all.
Yeah. So he was in OVW till 2006. And then had a brief cup of coffee as a tag match Spirit Squad, which was fun, the end of 2005, 2006, but then went back down at the beginning of 2007 till 2008. So
yeah, I'm glad he's getting a push right now. Yeah. I'm glad he's getting a push right now. I understand he's a new champion. I think TNA, right?
Yeah. He left a WWE, and man, he is, well, one, he's a funny guy, great charisma, great character. Mm-hmm. Every time he's in the ring, you know you're about to have a good match. You know that. No matter who his opponent is, you know he's about to make it a good match. Always been a fan of Dolph Ziggler, and look forward to what he's got in store for him, because I'm with you, man. I think he's got a lot left in the tank, and he's going to go for a long time.
Oh, definitely.
As long as he wants to. He's in great shape, looks great still. So he's got a bright future.
A lot of personality. A lot of personality.
Also on July 27th, I wondered, me and Dog actually had him on as a guest on our podcast. I wondered how many times you crossed paths with the great Shannon Moore.
Shannon, I remember him from 3 Count. I never really made a lot of trips with him, but he was a super nice kid and he had great to work with. He was one of those North Carolina shooters, the young shooter kids that were Shane Helms and all those guys. Yeah. I remember him, them trying to take Fit Finley down one time before TV when everybody was out there going over stuff, and he comes sneaking up behind him and grabbed him, and they wrestled like hell for a minute. Taking Fit down is not an easy task, you know, even when he's over and had a hurt leg. And I mean, hey, lucky it was just a wrestling thing instead of a fighting thing. Fit could get quite nasty if he had to, man. But but super nice kid, man. He's overcome some tremendous things, you know, watching and reading his story and watching.
Yeah, now he speaks. He goes out to, he's a counselor and helps people who are in, in their sobriety and making that happen. He's fought the demons that came out on the other side. So he's helping people. And we always sending good vibes to you, Shannon Moore, wherever you are.
Happy
birthday, sir. And also on the 27th. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Triple H. Nick Patrick, your interaction with Hunter.
I always got along fine with him. You know, he was, it wasn't like we hung out as buddies. Everything was all straight business, you know. And I worked some with him. Whenever I had a match with him, it was easy to work with. He was a top guy, one of the top guys of all times in our industry.
Was he doing anything behind the scenes yet besides?
He's always been behind the scenes.
But I mean, how involved when you were there? How involved behind the scenes was he when you were there?
Well, he wasn't like sitting in on the production meetings, but he was always in on everything before it got to that stage, I'm sure.
He was getting to there.
Yeah, he was getting groomed to be where he's at right now.
Right. Yeah. And I thought he's done a great job. I think we just saw that it was the
2 year
anniversary is a weird word, but he's been in charge of creative for 2 years now, which is hard to believe. That's hard to believe that's been 2 years.
Yeah, time goes so fast, man. That is hard to believe, isn't it? But all you got to do is look at their crowds, and they'll tell you what kind of job he's doing.
A couple of older names that on the 29th, when this episode drops, of course, Monday the 29th, I can't wait to see if you've had any interaction with these guys. Jack said, Nick, did you ever have any interaction with the birthday boy, Captain Lou Albano?
No, I never did. He was always, really? he made different territories, but by the time I was in my stroke, he did mostly up in New York. I met him, but I didn't really know him, and I never worked with him a lot. He was, you know, through most all my career, he was always up in New York, and I never went there until Vince bought it.
Right.
So, no, I didn't know him very well, but I heard he was wide from some of the old timers. He was wide open. I know that. You know, it was like the rest of the old timers; they were pretty much wide open. You know,
a couple of guys that I know you had interaction with. We're going to get a very special birthday to the one and only. By the way, didn't know it was the same birthday and same year. Scott Steiner's the first one. So talk about a little Big Papa Pump there.
Oh, I love Scott to death, man. I become an agent in WCW, and I was like the low man on the pole with the agent status, right? So I'd be sitting in towns, other guys didn't want to go to, and if somebody didn't want to talk to somebody, they'd send me to go talk to them, and they were always scared of Scott because Scott had a great thing going, man. He'd be like, I'll get you pissed off, and I'll hire
you right on. Yeah.
Nick, you go tell Scott that we don't want him to do that. He knew me. I didn't give a damn one way or the other. Hey, Scott. I said, don't kill a messenger, dude, but here's what they want. And we'd laugh, and I'd tell him, and he'd do it. And it was a big game, you know what I mean? And then they'd see him again. He'd walk a wide circle around him. And it was a cool way for him to get his way. You know,
yeah,
they were afraid. Well, I want to ask Scott that. He might piss him off, you know. I loved it, man. And we'd laugh. I laugh about that shit now, man. It's great. It was a great gig.
He's one of the guys that their gimmick is people perceive that as him at Nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Him and his brother, Robbie, man, oh, when they ribbed people, they were relentless on getting after people. They were.
I got to briefly work with him. He was doing an autograph line at one of the StarCast conventions.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it was funny. The funny moment that I saw was, people would get like a picture and almost be kind of standoffish, mm-hmm. even though it was not. They would be like standing there. They wouldn't put their arm. You know, some people.
Yeah, they weren't sure how to react. Yeah. I don't know. He might explode. I better be careful.
They would talk to him or shake his hand or something. And then he would like.
It's that same psychology working on them.
He tried to engage with them and they would back out and leave. And he finally was like, am I doing something wrong? And I think everybody's just intimidated by your dad.
Yeah.
It's just, he's everyone perceives him as Scott Steiner that was on the television or in the ring, whatever the case may be. He's one of those guys where.
And he never looks like he's in a good mood anyway, too.
No,
so he always you don't really see him joking around and laughing at him. You know, he's always got kind of serious look on his face. So, yeah, I can see it. I've seen him laugh because he'd laugh when I'd have to come tell him some shit that they sent me to tell him.
That's hilarious. I mean, everyone I've known in the business, nobody says, I don't like that guy. Nobody says he was working
Scott.
With. Nobody says anything. He is Scott Steiner.
He's Scott.
That's amazing. And last but not least, same year, same day, celebrating your birthday with Scott Steiner, Mr. Sonny Ono.
Sonny's a great guy. I didn't travel around with him a lot, but he was super, super mind for the business too. You know, and
creative.
Yeah, very creative and tough dude too, man. A lot of people don't know. You got to be careful who you jump on. You know what I mean? Sonny Ono is like world-class caliber fighter. And people, if you don't know that, somebody come up and think they're going to grab this little dude, man, he would tie your ass in a knot, man, and with ease. And a lot of people don't realize that, but he's a super, super nice guy, man. And I've always got along really well with him. It's fun to work with. I thought him and Ernest the Cat had a great gimmick together. In fact, Ernest the Cat showed up to our show at Realm.
Really?
The other night when we had the cage match. I think Jimma Jules is doing some martial arts working out with him, and he came to see her match. And he came and hung out and talked to us for a little while, watched her match. And then
that's amazing.
He saw who the new champ was going to be and head on out, man.
That's awesome, though, man. Good to see him there.
Yeah, that was cool.
Also, man, I've got the opportunity to hang with him, Sonny, off camera and just hanging out. And he's got a great memory. He knows how to tell a story. He's so creative.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, yeah. Kickboxing, martial artists, karate. He was at one point named the best bantamweight in the world by the Professional Karate Association. That is a hell of a
job. Could you imagine not knowing that and then thinking, you well, I'll show him.
Look at this old guy. And then he just...
I'd like to have that on video, man. But this sets somebody up.
Well, sending love to Sonny Ono today. Happy birthday, man.
You should have heard what Sonny said about you, man. You should have heard what Sonny said about your mom.
Yeah, gas him up to go talk to him.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's dip back into the mailbag. Our next question comes from Adam Krasnoff. Thank you, AK, for hitting us up. He's got a few questions, of course. And he first says, Hogan versus Warrior at Halloween Havoc 1998. Mm-hmm. Has gone down in history as one of WCW's biggest stinkers.
Yeah.
As the match turned into a complete train wreck, what was going on through your mind while you were in the ring officiating it?
Well, it was an uncomfortable feel because it wasn't a good flow, but I got my knee blown out in that match. And I almost didn't realize that. Yeah, there was a part at the very end. You'll see Hogan grab me and throw me out over the top rope. Right before that, I was pushing him back, and I had my hands on his chest, and as I was pushing him back, the Warrior was over there selling, and somehow he rolled right in sideways to my knee. And I went, oh! And I grabbed Hogan by the chest, and I went, and I could feel it, man. I said, and I tried to raise my heel up, and I couldn't raise my heel up toward my butt. It was like something was gone. But I was able to stand on it. I didn't understand it. When I blew my other knee out, man, there wasn't no stand. It was just gone, man. But this time, it was different. I felt something go boom. I felt it, but I didn't drop like to my face like the first time. But I was like amazed that I was able to stand up and that I was able to walk, but I couldn't pull my heel up. So I looked at Hogan. I said, he just blew my knee out. He goes, can you take a bump? I went, yeah. And he grabbed me and threw me out over the top rope, and I took the bump and stayed the hell out of the way, man.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I had to have ACL. That was my second ACL surgery. My first one was on the right knee. That was my left knee ACL surgery.
That is incredible right there.
Yeah. Things happen, man. Little things happen that people don't see. You don't realize that. You know, somebody just rolled into my leg, and it didn't look that bad. You'll see it. If you look back at it, you'll think, how in the world did that blow his freaking knee out? But did. It did, man. I wasn't expecting it. And boom, and he rolled in right from the outside, and it made my knee kind of go in a little bit. When it went in, I just felt – and I might have already – it may have been injured from before, and I had rehabbed it. And, you know, and it may have been weaker. You know, but if the injury that I had to it before was light, would have been way back, you know. But, I you know, because I've had bad knees for years, you know. But that one made me have to – I could touch my butt with my heel before I went in the ring. After that, I was like, oh, crap. That's the weirdest thing I've ever felt in my life. I've got no hamstring action here going on. That's just weird, man.
What'd you think of the fire spot where
he
tried to shoot fire and it just flung off in his hand.
It was as big of a fizzle as the friggin' match. But at that point in time, a fizzly fire was just appropriate for what they had just witnessed. Yeah, a fizzle was a perfect way to end that.
Yeah. All right, let's see what Adam's got next. He says, Honky Tonk Man once said in a shoot interview that Hogan smoked a lot of pot back in the 80s. Did you ever burn one down with the Hulkster?
No, I wasn't around him in the 80s. I was only around him in WCW and then he had his own locker room and his own thing, you know, and the only time I ever went around was, you know, for business, you know, and, you know, if I was going to go smoke, I would take off and go somewhere, go find a good hiding spot where nobody could go find me, you know, but no, I never smoked with Hulk, and I'm sure, you know, back in the day, almost everybody, not everybody, You know, I say everybody, but I miss just a general term because the percentage is so high.
What do you think the percentage was in the '80s compared to the '90s? Was there a big swing?
I think more in the '80s. I think
what do you think? Judge, 50%.
I think more than 50%.
Okay.
Especially 75. Figured out that could help. That help you. Yeah, probably so. Probably so.
Okay. And then the 90s, what?
Easily. I think, judge change, different stuff. When I was up in WWE, I had my smoking buddies, but them young kids that was doing shit that was getting in trouble, they didn't give a damn about going smoking a joint. They was doing other shit. Yeah, I didn't give a damn. I didn't have my run with all that. That's in my rearview mirror, man. You guys be careful and go ahead on, but be careful,
So if it's not Hogan, there's got to be somebody that rolled up into rotation one night that you went, wow, I would never thought they were going to roll up in this circle.
I'll tell you who I smoked with. I probably told you this story. I smoked with Gordon Soley one time. Well, several times, actually.
Yeah.
I got Gordon so high, I missed his flight going home one time. I picked him up the next week. And he said, oh, my God, babe. He called everybody, babe. He goes, give me a warning next time you break that stuff out. Let me know if it's one took or two took. He said, you dropped me off. He said, I checked my bag. I went to the gate. I heard him announce my flight, but I couldn't get out of the chair. And I sat there, and my flight left.
Yes.
And I had to get on the next one.
That's so good. Gordon Soley of all people.
Yes, sir.
That is great stuff right there. Adam said his last question, and we appreciate you, AK. He said, how are house shows booked in WCW? Were the matches and finishes dictated by those in the booking offices, or did individual road agents have some leeway in making decisions? Could they switch that night to night based on what the crowd, or was it pretty predetermined?
It was pretty locked in what they want to do because they're booking in advance. They're doing something now, so it'll affect something the next time or the next time. So they can't just have people freelance changing things on the fly. That very, very seldom ever happens. Especially at that level, and most of the time, house shows were designed to get guys ready to have their TV match so they could find out what worked, what didn't work, so they can get their shit smooth for the TV, because we had two live TVs and a pay-per-view, two live TVs every week and a pay-per-view every month. So that's, doing live TV is damn near like doing a pay-per-view. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's just the pay structure is different at all, But the thought process and the how much you have to put into it is the same, But there wasn't a lot of wing in it, And house shows were meant to draw up to bring in revenue, but also so that guys could polish up and get ready for their TV stuff.
You remember who were booking the house shows back then?
I think John Laurinaitis was when I was in WWE. I think John Laurinaitis was.
What about WCW?
Good question.
I'm
not sure exactly, because I think Laurinaitis did that for a while too at the end when he was in WCW there, when he was infiltrating to get ready for all the shit to happen. But before that, I'm not exactly sure who booked all the house shows as to who was on the cards. I'm not sure.
All right. Let's see what we got. Will Mullins just says, great, great, wonderful. Well, thank you, Will. Appreciate that.
All right, man. Cool.
We'll assume you're talking about how great and great and wonderful this show is. How about that?
I'm hoping so.
Well, Tony Flower says, what's up, gentlemen? What's up, Tony? He said, Nick, when you became the NWO referee, did this result in any type of pay change, given you were now part of a storyline as a character? Thanks, fellas. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Nick? Any pay difference, or were you just week to week? That's how it was rolling.
Yeah, I just kept rolling, man. I did my deal. If it was going to take me any further than that, I was going to ask for more money, But I ended up, that role ended up allowing me to work my way into an agent's position from there, because they saw that I knew more, about constructing matches than just sitting there listening and doing, hey, what do you want me to do? So it as far as that aspect, it helped me in the future, so that I, because I eventually become a road agent out of it. But
any bump on any change on the pay-per-view where you were the ref for the whole deal?
Nope, same deal. Yeah, that's when I started saying, "Hey guys."
Yeah.
Yeah, I started saying, "Hey guys," and they started fading me out. Next thing you know, well, let's get him back to refereeing and let him be. Okay.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Our next question's from, I apologize, Jim. I'm going to get your last name wrong. I'm going to give it a run and go here. Uh-oh. Jim Consovung. K-H-A-N-S-O-U-V-O-N-G. Let's call him Jim K. How about that?
Jim K. There you go.
Jim Consovung. He said, "I just joined ad-free shows this morning, and I am loving it."
All right.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you. Welcome to the ad-free shows family, brother. He says, "Nick, hope all is well with you and your family. If you have the opportunity and health permits, would you ref one more match back in WWE or even AEW?" So we'll first stop there. Opportunity and health permitting, would you ever go back for one more match?
Opportunity and health permitting, hell yeah. I mean, be stupid not to. That's such a rush. Great payday and to be able to perform in front of, you know, that's what we live for, performing in front of live crowds that you can feel and jerk emotion out of. Hell yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But if I went now, as soon as I got there, my body would say, "Damn, why did you make this trip? I can't do this." And then I'd get in the ring and my body would say, "That's it. I quit. You old fart. I'm done." My brain tells me one thing all the time, and my body's like, "Oh hell no."
Did you work much with Cena? Did Cena have a go-to ref?
I worked a lot with Cena when they were grooming him when he first started. He had the run with JBL. I did a lot of the Cena JBL stuff. I did a lot of
That's
that.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Look. Let's put it out of the ether, speaking into existence. You know, Cena has announced he's going to make his run, his last final run. Next year will be his final year as a performer. We'll get into that probably, you know, closer to when he's winding it down, on kind of a retrospective on what he means to the business in your eyes, because you saw it up close and personal. But let's put it out in the ether. Whoever his last match is with, let's bring back Nick Patrick.
Oh, hell. I could probably do it, but I don't know if there's enough tape.
Just the last one.
I don't know. I'd look like the freaking mummy out there. I'd need so much tape.
You look like the Yeti.
That'd be a new gimmick for me, the mummy ref. I'd count like Bronco Lubitsch, just with my foot about dropping.
That's great. Great question, Jim, and we appreciate you joining ad-free shows, brother. Welcome into the fold, and he's got a couple more questions. He said, "Nick, how did the match with you and Chris Jericho at WCW World War III 1996 come about? How do you remember that popping up, Nick?"
It was Kevin Sullivan's. All the stuff that I did as a youth was all Kevin Sullivan. And he'd run it by Eric. But Kevin come up with all of that stuff. And he come up with the idea and the angle and the match itself. I sat down with Jericho, and then he come up with all, you know, the body of the match. And we worked it out. The only thing I really come up with was at the very end. I knew, you know, I said, "Well, hell," I said, me climbing up the top and him running and slamming me off the top and giving me the kick. That was the only thing really that I contributed, you know. That's because everything that he said, "Hey, well, why don't we do this?" I was like, "Yeah, I liked it," you know. I was like, "Yeah." And it wasn't for me to get over, it was for him to get over. So I wanted to do what he wanted to do. That was the focus of the deal. And he was, I knew from that moment on, he was going to make it, because he knew his business, and he was smooth as silk, and he had personality. It just had to be where somebody was going to really give him the pencil on his heel, is the old saying that they used to have back
trust
in the
him.
Day.
Put that trust in him.
Yeah.
Jim says, "Thank you for taking the time to answer the questions." Thank you, Jim, and look forward.
Thank you,
Jim. You'll send us a question every single time, man, and we'll get to you. And also tell us how to pronounce your last name, Consovung. If I got it wrong, I apologize. Also, speaking of, while we're here, just a quick reminder, if you'll just Google GoFundMe Kevin Sullivan, your yes. old friend, Nick, who is going through the fight of his life, literally. He has a GoFundMe to help his recovery. I haven't seen an update in a couple weeks, but the last one I saw said he was regaining a lot of his physical strength, which was incredible. They were happy yes. about that. He's getting to do physical and occupational therapy every day. And his next step will be to get him a night nurse at a facility where he is receiving care, because rest is apparently an integral part of the healing process, yes. they said. And the night nurse will get him the optimal care. And those funds that you will be donating at his GoFundMe will be going towards that. But look, we love the wrestling family. Nick, they had an original goal of $20,000. And last I checked, they were at $55,000 already. So
yeah, and with what they're having to do, they'll run through that so quick.
So fast.
I remember Pops spent a couple of weeks, his last few weeks of his life was intensive care and in the hospital, man. And man, that's... You get a
when you
hospital
start getting
bill,
around the clock, nurse, it just eats it up. It
and when
eats
you
up.
Look at all the little things that they itemize after a while, when you look at the total bill, but then you look at all the little nitpicky crap things that they itemize, and you're like, it just kind of it pisses you off.
It's your Tylenol, you know.
It's a work. It's a scam, man.
We put socks on him. Those are new socks for $50. You're like, what?
Yeah. The seam still runs across the tip of your toe. It sucks, you know. Yeah, socks that you'll end up in your drawer that you'll never wear. Even if you're sick, I'm never wearing those son bitches again.
If you have not donated and would like to.
I lost power over here, man.
I can see you, though.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you can see me.
I can hear you. I mean,
oh, you can't see me? Okay, well, we've just lost power, and I'm going off of my computer power.
Oh, no.
Well, we're back. Yeah, we got storms all around us right now.
All right, well, let's keep asking questions. We'll get you as long as you're in.
Okay,
everybody, if you're watching along, just look at the blank screen by Nick. But we're here. We're ready to go. All right?
I'm having a dark match now, man.
We've put Nick back on the dark matches. Will Mullins said, hey, Mr. Patrick, was wondering if you had any interesting stories about Buddy Landell that you could share with us. He said, where does Buddy rank on the list of worst drivers?
Oh, I never rode with Buddy driving.
He was a bad driver?
Oh, yeah, I'd already heard. And I was I'd been in enough car wrecks, and that was a road that I knew that I didn't want to go down that road. So, yeah, but Buddy was excellent talent, but a nut, man. He was so funny, and a great personality, fun guy to hang out with. And you know, he had his demons. Well, so many people did back in the day, you know. But fun, man, and a kid can go. He could go now, and great personality. And like I said, a lot of fun to hang out with because it was funny, man. He was there.
Who introduced you to Buddy Landell first? Do you remember?
I think I just met him through the business. You know, we ended up coming into to Georgia Championship Wrestling, I think it was, where I met him. And
did he run with back in the day? Do you remember?
Oh, God, I don't really remember. He didn't run with me a whole lot. But we both all got in trouble, but different separate trouble things, you know?
Yeah.
He had his little clique of people he hung out with, and I wasn't going to get into that clique, man. So, you know, we were buddies, don't get me wrong, but there was, you know, sometimes you have to do your own thing for your own sanity and for survival, too.
Will said, thank you in advance. All the best to your family, especially your mama and Big Nick.
Oh, thank you, man.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate that. Mr. Epic, appreciate you chiming in. He says, who should be the first full-time referee in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Don't they already got one in there? Timmy White in there?
No, I don't think so. There's one in there yet.
In the WWE Hall of Fame, they put Timmy White in there.
Did they put him in?
Yeah, they inducted Timmy White. Yes, sir. Timmy's in there.
Okay. Oh, Tim White inducted him. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Tim White's in
there. That was 2023. You're right.
Yeah, so he's in. If they're going to do another one?
Yeah, who else would you put in?
Well, if they was alive, if somebody that was still alive, I would say Earl Hebner or his brother Dave, either one of those guys could go, you know. They both have done incredible things in the industry and worked top matches, you know. So, you know, that's one of the first two names everybody always thinks of.
Yeah.
Tommy Young's another name. Think of all the main events that he did throughout the year. He wasn't up there at WWE, but think of all the main events he did working for the Crockett Territory and for
legendary
WCW. Yeah, yeah. So, well, there's a ton of people out there. I think Nick Patrick should do it. He was a hell of a ref. And I think that NWO ref guy that used to wear the ski mask, he's bad. Good. Yeah, I think I'd like to pattern in my style after that dude.
I don't know whatever happened to him, but
I don't know, man. He kind of reminded me of the psycho from Dirty Harry, man.
Brad Stanton said, "Hey guys, can we get a Deep South road trip to the Northeast? Come to the Philadelphia area," says Brad.
Hey, I'd love to, man. I'd love to. We're starting to get around a little bit. You know, we're going to be making some announcements here coming up real soon.
Maybe we can get a crossover show where almost like a home and away in college football. Y'all go team up with an Indy up north somewhere, and then they return the favor and come back down to Atlanta.
We've got some things in the work. I just don't want to spill the beans right now, but it's not that far away.
We're trying to get you to know something.
Yeah, you're trying to give me the tippet, but I can't yet until it's completely iced. But one of them is iced, you know. But
all right.
I think we're going to have a 3-trip run that's out of the state of Georgia.
I like to hear it.
Let's put it that way. When it comes to fruition, y'all will be the first ones to know.
All right. Carl Hayes has got a couple questions for us. Thanks, Carl. He said, "Nick, do you think we will see a WWE Women's Weekly TV show or another Women's PLE again with the change to Netflix?"
That's hard to say. I think it's possible because they have so many ladies, but I think that it might take away. It would give them a chance for more ladies to get ring time, and they could get more personalities over if they did that, you know, and it possibly would give them a chance to get more ladies into the main roster or say what, you know, but would they treat the ladies roster as a main roster, or would it just be a developmental type thing? Where would they go with it? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Are they going to treat it as a separate entity altogether, kind of like Glow or Women of Wrestling, whatever it may be, or
is it the level that they're bringing through?
Yeah.
You know, is it supposed to be the pinnacle, or is it a stepping stone? You have to figure that part out, and then go from there. But you know, it could certainly work. Yeah.
Carl also said, "This is an interesting line." He said, "Along those lines, the writing and cinematography improvements have been huge at WWE with the Hollywood connection. Do you ever see WWE winning an Emmy in one of those previously awarded categories that they do during the day before, whatever? But do you ever think they could get to that part where they're getting nominated for television Emmys?"
I think so. I don't know if storyline will right off the bat, but I think production people have a chance to first. You know,
maybe Netflix brings a different view to it and they get to see it.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I definitely
live television is incredible to pull off, and they do it as high
people don't realize how hard that is. People don't realize how hard that is. You get into a comfort zone when you do it a lot, but there's always, you know, that's the only way you can get into a comfort zone when you do it a lot is if you're completely confident in your abilities and you've been in a situation before where shit melted down and you was able to step in and just start calling and boom, 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 getting it back on track. And you have the confidence in yourself that you know you can do that because you've done it before.
And to think, you know, WWE, just WWE, again, AEW does their thing as well, but just WWE, they're going to have live television on Monday. They're going to have an NXT show. They're going to have a live television on Friday. So they're doing two live shows every single week. That's pretty incredible to think about. And
a pay-per-view every month.
Yeah, much less the pay-per-views, PLEs, whatever you want to call them, whatever the side stuff they've got, the online exclusive things they've got, the network exclusives, just the live television part. I would, I would be down for that. I would hope they would get their recognition one day of how good of a job they do bringing us live television every single week, multiple times.
They're going to need a – it'd be hard for one writing team to handle it all. They would need a couple of
Saturday Night Live gets it every now and then. You know what I mean?
They need a couple of writing teams to have creative ideas, but they need somebody that's a liaison between all those writing teams to make sure that shit's not getting repeated. You know what I mean? So this idea's got a great angle, a great idea, but this group over here got an idea, but it's almost the same as this, you know? And if there's no communication between the writing crews, that shit could happen.
Yep.
You know, so... But you need more writers because one group of people can't crank out that many ideas over a period of time without just totally burning out.
Yeah, for sure. And Carl said, is there a wrestler or wrestlers from the 70s or 80s that could have been bigger with the assistance of what we call social media now? The only way someone from Portland was known to someone in Massachusetts back then was the Aftermags. Could someone who didn't quite fit in one single territory have been successful in another had social media exposed them to a different crowd is what I'm saying, says Carl. Have a great evening, gents. Thank you, Carl. Appreciate that. With this day and age in social media, building your own personal brand, crossing over, branching out, getting worldwide, is there
definitely would have helped.
In the 70s, 80s where you went, they could have been a huge social media star.
Oh, yeah, it definitely would have helped because back in the day when you went to a new territory, you had the whole get over process started over again, you know, and unless you had drawn big money in a couple of places and they knew that you could do that, then would you be given that opportunity stepping right in to be put into that slot without having to step in and earn that slot and then start building it, you know what I mean? Like back in the day when Pop and Tom as the Assassins, they went all over the country working with the Kentuckians, you know, and they were popping territories. You know, there was guys that when you look at some of the old cards and you think, my God, look at the names on these cards. And there's top level name guy that's like in the first match. You're like, holy crap. Well, the reason is because the territory was so hot that you could make more money being in the opening match than you would be in being in the main event. It's somewhere else, you know, another territory that wasn't on fire. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why when you see some of those old cards and you think, holy shit, what a loaded card. What is this guy doing in the first match? You know, well, maybe he was younger at the time, but they weren't in that spot unless they could go, you know, especially back then. So that was the deal when you see
I think some of those, there's a lot of guys that could have got over. I think
that would have helped everybody.
The early territory days, guys like your dad, guys like Bullet Bob.
Oh, yeah.
They just had if you can find clips of their old promos, you watch them now and you're like, that still holds up as a damn good promo. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody cut it today, it would be a damn good promo. And so I think with social media back then, like you said, that – yeah, we're going to a new territory, but they would have already seen the promo where you're taping the guy's face to a tree and shooting it from 20 yards out.
Yeah, you remember that promo, huh? I'm coming to get you, Bob Armstrong.
Oh, look, Dog says it gave him nightmares. He's like, yeah, shoot, I'm chasing my dad. What am I supposed to do?
What's he doing over at our house?
Yeah, he's at dinner. God. What am I supposed to do? Social media would have been great. I mean,
hell yeah.
If you had a good promo back then, you would have been killer at social media. That's what social media is.
A lot of us
would
have probably been in a lot of trouble, too.
There would have been some cameras.
Cell phone cameras. Uh-oh.
And let's get to our next question. Bobby KF5GTX said, Nick, when did you know that you were a senior referee in WCW? How did that process evolve from when you started at WCW? That's interesting. When you're in the business, whatever business it may be, your job, whatever job, you go from I'm the young guy and I'm working, and then you're just guy that, hey, man, I've been here for a good while. Then you go, wait, I'm like one of the elder statesmen here. When did that click for you at WCW?
Tommy Young actually ended up getting hurt. They came to me, and
okay,
And they said they wanted me to be the head ref at that point because, and it doesn't, head ref doesn't really do that much. All you do is you go and you sit in on all the production meetings and you assign what ref does what match, you know. And I would go put guys in according to their experience level and to whatever, you know, decided who did what match. And I tried to make sure that I wasn't a hog and take all the main events all the time, which you would see that out of a lot of guys that was in that position. But I wanted everybody to get a chance to do it, you know, especially, you know, especially as I got older and I'd done a ton of main events, you know, and it was like, okay, well, if I could put him in there, then I can get back here. As soon as it's done, I can get a shower. I can get that all down the road.
Right. You're going to be ready to go.
Yeah, because we're going somewhere every, and you know, you're working 300 days, man. And there's only so much dedication you can give when you've got to get on and beat to the next town. And if you don't get out and go, then you ain't going to get but 1 or 2 hours sleep. You know, so sometimes, you know, you have to enter those factors in. But when I knew that I was, when I was there, when they asked me if I'd be the head ref and be in the, you know, the guy in charge of doing this or doing that, you know, they didn't really make me any more money. I just would have to listen to production meetings and assign who did what, you know.
But you knew those are big shoes to fill. Tommy Young was the man. And so if they're calling you on it, those are big shoes to fill. That's what you knew. That's a good nod. It was a good nod for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, man, this has been a fun show. Thanks everybody for sending in the questions. We appreciate that. We had some cool footage of your last match with Deep South Wrestling, or your last event that you had just here on July 27th, just a couple days ago from when this episode drops. So Nick, we hinted at it earlier, a lot of things going on in Deep South Wrestling coming up in the month of August.
Yeah, let me run it down. I'm looking at it right now. On Saturday, August the 17th, Deep South Wrestling will be at Little Cottage Brewery, 6 o'clock bell time.
This is a new venue?
Yes, it's a new one. It'll be our first time at Little Cottage.
Nice.
On Sunday, August 18th, we're going to be returning to New Realm Brewery, and we're rocking New Realm. We just blew the roof off there. Just the other day, we got a new Deep South champion. There's a big festival coming to Grant Park area here in Atlanta, and we were going to be a part of that festival. On Saturday, August 24th, you can see Deep South Wrestling at Summer Shade noon at 4 o'clock at Grant Park, or 4 p.m. It says 2 to 3, so I'm thinking that there's a couple of times that there's that we're going to have matches earlier in the day, and then there's a break, and then there's going to be matches later in the day as well. So, on the 24th and the 25th, it's a 2-day affair. It's Summer Shade noon at Grant Park in Atlanta. You can see Deep South Wrestling. So we got 17th at Little Cottage Brewery, the 18th at New Realm Brewery, the 24th and the 25th in Grant Park at Summer Shade noon.
Summer Shade Festival there, like you said, in Grant Park, big festival. They got all kind of artists, all kind of venues, all kind of food, all kind of music. They're going to have you guys wrestling. They got a 5K to start it off. So such a huge event that you guys are getting able to, man, that speaks volumes to, hey, we've got artists and music. We also want to come with the culture of what's going on hot in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, that's why we're hitting our age. That's why we're hitting our demographic. That's, you know, Eric is, my man, Eric Adams has been putting all these things together for me. He's really getting us into some hip, cool spots, and that's how we're building our young demographic. When I was saying Summer Shade noon, I meant noon is our first two matches start at noon. And then the second ones will be at 4. So we have like two matches at noon.
Then
more festival. Then at 4 o'clock, we'll have like two more matches. So it's going to be the same thing on the 24th and the 25th at Summer Shade down in Grant Park. That's going to be a lot of fun, man. We just did that big heavy metal festival in Atlanta, too. Those heavy metal kids, we sent our monsters to there, and they loved it. They had a blast, man. They had the This Is Awesome chant going, and, man, our kids all had goosebumps. They were digging it, man. It was fun. Somebody said, Nick, I didn't see you in the mosh pit. I'm like, dude, I dig heavy music, don't get me wrong, but you ain't never going to see my whole ass in a mosh pit, man. Not ever.
I got in a mosh pit one time, and I turned my ankle, and it swelled up like a softball.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I was at a festival, too, the same thing, and I was like, what a awful choice this was.
I could just see me trying to dive off the stage if people just let me get drunk. That ain't happening, man.
Well, we appreciate everybody for hanging out with us on the Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick. Please send your questions in. Whenever you listen to this, drop us a question. It could be about wrestling. It could be about Nick's career. It could be about world events, sports, food, music, whatever it may be. Any question is available. Nothing's off the table with our man, Mr. Nick Patrick. Nick, thank you, man. Always a fun time to get to sit down and chat with you, brother. Man, I'm excited
blast,
to
do my it's deep sound. Gig.
So much is rocking.
You hear that?
The thunder?
Yeah, we're all up in it. Man, you should see the garden we got over here. We've had thunder and lightning rain like every day for about a week. Tony's planted this big garden. The garden looks like it's on the gas out there. But I don't know what it is about thunder and lightning rain, but it makes the grass in your garden grow like
they love it.
Oh, yeah. We got big giant squash and zucchinis and eggplants and stuff all out there. I got some cool hot peppers, too. Got some cayenne and them little Thai peppers. Them little red Thai peppers will light your ass up, man. You got to be careful eating them, man. Little slices at a time.
Hey, by the way, shout out, Nick. I'm going to get it to you. It's not here yet, but I just found it in my messages. Mm-hmm. It took a while, but I didn't even see it in my messages. But I want to give him a shout out. Smoking in the Barns, who messaged us, listens to the show here on Ad Free, and is going to send us some barbecue stuff. Remember, he mentioned it and asked.
Yeah, cool.
And he reached out. We got in touch. We're going to hook it up. We're going to figure it out. He's going to get it to me, and I'm going to get some stuff from you so we can get it over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to put Chef Tony on it, man. We'll see. We'll give it the critique, man.
Can't wait. For Mr. Nick Patrick, I am Cassio. Appreciate y'all joining us. We'll see you back here again in 2 weeks for the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick, baby. Everybody, appreciate y'all. Drop a comment. Nick, we'll see you back here again in 2 weeks, brother.
We'll see you, brother. Thanks, man.